Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Adrian Clark from thepremierleague.com. Eyes down, look in, it's Bannockburn bingo. Kilts, fans in the fountain, flower of Scotland, England's pathetic brass band. Maybe, just maybe, a little football. Looking forward to it, Tony?
Well, in a perverse way. I mean, what strikes me is I remember growing up, this used to be one of the biggest games of the season. You know, the annual home international, and one of the few games that you'd see on television, and the build-up was massive, and it really meant something. Now it seems to be a little bit underwhelming, you know, the way the game's changed. But it's a huge game for England, and, well, it's a huge game for both nations. You know, it'll determine the fate of both managers, I would have thought. And so, in that sense, yeah. But I can't imagine there being much football played.
No, there never is there, Adrian? You know, dwelling on the managers, Gareth Southgate is yet to fully commit himself, but he does need this win, doesn't he?
Well, does he? Or are the FA just going to appoint him anyway? I think he's got to mess up royally not to get the England job, because he is the easy choice. He's the cheap option. They want him to do so well. So I believe the FA will look for as many
possible. Is there any other choice?
Yeah, exactly. There's no standout alternative at the moment. So they desperately want him to do okay. And I think if he does okay, it will be enough for Gareth Southgate. For Gordon Strachan, I maybe see things differently. I think maybe no matter what happens in this game, his tenure's probably coming towards the end, because it doesn't look like Scotland are going to qualify for another major tournament, which I guess was the target at the outset. So I'd imagine he's probably on his last legs as Scotland boss. But Gareth Southgate, I suspect it's only just beginning for him.
The squad, not too many surprises in it. What about Jack Wilshere, though? Did he actually deserve a recall after what essentially is a couple of games for Bournemouth?
Yeah, not from where I can see. There's so much expectation and belief attached to Jack Wilshere. I've never really seen it myself. He's never dominated games regularly.
Not when he got six Man of the Match performances in a row for England. He was their best player, wasn't he? Was it only less than 18 months ago?
Well, he had a couple of good games. the way he's been talked up, the hype over the years, you know, that he's a player who could dominate games and change games, he didn't do it often enough for me.
Well, he has to play games to dominate them, doesn't
he? Exactly, you know, and he's been almost a bit part player at Bournemouth. You know, he hasn't exactly, he never went there, got into the team, and he's changed the direction of their season. It'd be nice to see him develop as a player, but I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, he's got a lot of improvement to come this season, I suspect. I don't actually think he's playing in his best position. He's been used as number 10, isn't he, at Bournemouth? Eddie Howe's got his unit there with Sermon and Arthur, and Wilshere's in front. I prefer him not in the deepest role, but as a box-to-box midfielder where he's facing play. I think with back to goal, he's not a Mesut Ozil type number 10. So I don't think we're seeing the best out of him. Also, because Bournemouth don't have anywhere near as much of the ball as he's used to at Arsenal. Therefore, every time he does get the ball, there's an expectation or a need for him to do something. And we haven't really seen it. We've just seen it in bits and pieces, really, from Jack Wilshere. I think he's slightly fortunate to get a recall based on form. He's done all right. But with Dele Alli injured, he'll come right into the manager's thinking for these two games. No doubt about that. He has got international pedigree. If you rewind the clock for when he was in form, he did a good job for England. I think he's quite well suited to international football.
What about, you know, put yourself in the position of Mauricio Pochettino. You've already lost Dele Alli, probably quite conveniently over the international break, but you're allowing Harry Kane, your prized asset, to turn up in what will be a kick fest, basically. Are you comfortable with that?
Not completely, but on the other hand, it does give them a little bit of match fitness when he comes out the other side of the international break to you know, sort of to be firing for Tottenham as well. You know, he looked a little bit stale in the North London derby. He should be at his sharpest best when he comes back for the Premier League. So I'd probably rationalise it that way to myself.
I think it'd do him good. I mean, he's playing in the North London derby. That's a pretty physical game. He's got Koscielny nibbling at his ankles all game long. I mean, is Scotland going to be any different for us? I'm with you. I think at Spurs, if I was the Spurs manager, I'd be thinking, play him. Please play him. He needs the games.
Mm. Scotland, they had a very bad loss last time out, which Strachan was basically very fortunate to survive.
Yes.
They haven't got enough players playing regular club football. Hardly anyone plays in Europe. That's what Strachan has been saying. Mm. Excuses or reasons?
Well, they're just not a great side. I mean, there's not a lot to choose, is there, for Scotland? I think that was a poor result. I don't think you can make too many excuses for a 3-0 defeat to Slovakia. I don't think you can blame that on injuries. They had a strong enough team to get a result there, and they didn't turn up. It's as simple as that. Scotland, for them to compete at international level, have to fight for their lives. They have to show all the qualities that you associate with Scottish football. And they're more than capable. They've gone and beaten huge nations in recent seasons.
Malta, 5-0.
5-1.
So 5-1, sorry.
But they've got it there. But yeah, Scotland, they have to be fully at it to stand a chance in this game as well.
But the thing is, you look at Northern Ireland and you see what they've done with a group of players who are not as good as Scotland's players. You know, Scotland aren't great. And this is a failure. Strachan. Strachan is, he's full of... basically snotty answers at the press conferences. And he exudes this, like, I know more than you. But you know what? He isn't putting together a team that's greater than the sum of its parts. Its parts aren't that great, but Northern Ireland and Wales showed us that they can do it. Yes. Wales have a superstar. Yeah. And
they're putting Strachan to shame, aren't they?
But they do. They're showing Strachan up for all his weaknesses.
And you've got players retiring, then unretiring. Yeah. Scott Brown is there.
Strange one.
It is a very strange one. Mm. He's probably lording over my mate Joey Barton at the moment. But is he really an international quality player?
He's had a half-decent career. He's made the best of his ability, hasn't he? And he's been a good servant for club and country, but his best days are behind him now. I mean, you've got to be looking, I suppose, to James McArthur, Robert Snodgrass, Matt Ritchie. These are the stars of the Scotland team, and they're Premier League standard footballers, but they're not...
Bottom dwellers,
exactly. I mean, you look at the squad, it's a championship squad. If that was a club team, you'd put them probably middle of the championship. They wouldn't even be pushing for the playoffs, Scotland.
Well, it's basically a third, isn't it? Championship, a third championship, sort of a third Scotland and a third Premier League bottom dwellers. Mm. So, but there should be enough talent there to qualify in these tournaments where everyone gets in. You know, the pub teams are getting in.
teamwork is what it's all about, isn't it? For teams like Scotland, we've seen it with Ireland. And you're right, I think Strachan's leadership has to be called into question. I've liked him previously. I think he's got good spirit and he's a different type of personality, isn't he? He's quite an unusual guy. But I remember him as a player, so bubbly, full of energy. But it does feel like he's almost dragging the players down, which I find strange.
The thing is, Strachan, he's a symbol of what's gone wrong with Scottish football. Not his fault, but he's the last Scottish player to win Football of the Year down here. And since then, the Scottish game has really slid downhill. That was, 92? No, 91?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned leadership, Adrian. Let's look at Jose Mourinho, which we tend to do every week. We have Luke Shaw and Chris Smalling not in the England squad, presumably for injury reasons.
Yes.
Yeah, it seems to me that they've been scapegoated by Jose Mourinho. His comments after that Swansea win, what do you think of that?
I think that's disgraceful comments from Jose Mourinho. He's thrown them under the bus. He has gone public. I mean, MUTV did name them and he did explain the situation that neither were...
You're a pro. You've been a pro.
Yeah.
What impact will that have in the dressing room?
I think it's very dangerous in the dressing room because it depends how popular these boys are. I'd imagine they are. I think they're nice lads. They will be fuming because their professionalism has been called into question. They've effectively been labelled soft. And footballers don't like to be labelled soft, and they will be smarting. And it's lucky, in a way, that it is an international break now where the players are all away. It could all blow over by the time they come back. But I don't know why he's picked a fight with these two. He obviously feels they're dispensable because it's not on to do that.
It's management by blunt instruments.
Yeah, well, last year, it was last season at Chelsea, he questioned Eden Hazard's hurt on TV. Yeah. And, you know, this seems to be a tactic that he's employing, you know, sort of fairly frequently. And it'll do you no good. It's the quickest way to lose a dressing room. And, you know, sort of people start questioning you. Mm. And it didn't work from a Chelsea. It won't work from a Manchester United.
Mm-hmm. With Chelsea, you know, we've had, 11 fixtures now. That win over Everton was, one, a fantastic team performance.
Yes.
You know, everyone 8, 9 out of 10. But also, that tells you what a manager can do to a team, doesn't
it? Yeah, he's a top manager. It was the nonsense story of the year when there was speculation over Conte's future just a few weeks ago. He's top class. The players love him. You can see it in the way that they play. They are charging around the pitch with so much more energy and enthusiasm than they did under Mourinho. And as a team, that was a complete team performance against Everton. Fabulous from back to front. And, yeah, I think Conte was a smart appointment and they should continue to get better. The issue is, I think, do they have two class players for each position? No. I think their first 11 is excellent at the moment. They're riding a wave, but I don't think they have the depth.
Mm. Well, you never know with Chelsea what's going to happen yet because the influence of the owner is really important. I think the crucial thing for Conte is his relationship with Hazard, which fell apart between Mourinho and Hazard. And I think if he keeps him on side, and, you know, he's one of the best players in Europe, isn't he? Mm. I mean, we expected him last year to have the sort of, you have to win him Football of the Year, a breakout year, or, you know, could well be this. I do think, though, they're still going to have to buy the squad. Isn't the sort of squad that suits Conte. Someone's going to catch that three out at the back. Everyone's raving about it, you know, at the moment. But really, Victor Moses, wing back, come on. At some point, that's going to end in tears. Mm,
but that's the current fashion statement, isn't it? Yeah, play three at the back.
Yeah, it is. We worked well for
Tottenham, did it?
Yeah,
worked for Everton, didn't it?
Yeah, it's not for everybody. It suits them at the moment. It really does. You need the right central midfielders, I think, as well. And you need the right guys at wing back. And at the moment, if you forget that his name's Victor Moses and that he's been loaned out to every club in the land, and you judge him purely on his recent performances, you say that that's a player. Victor Moses looks like a Chelsea player. He looks like he belongs. He is playing as well as anybody else at the moment, so I think it's his place to lose.
I don't doubt his talent. I doubt his position, and I doubt his positional sense playing
I think in the modern game, if you defend from the front, you don't necessarily need five defenders. You can rely on the back three, and if you've got two defensive midfielders like Conte and Matic can both get around the pitch and defend. They've got five defenders. I think the wing-backs for Chelsea, in effect, they don't have to do as much defending as wing-backs for Everton did, for example. So I think it's horses for courses.
Yeah, well, I think the good teams will find the space behind the full-back, the wing-back. The good news for Chelsea is there aren't many good teams in the Premier League.
This is true. And also, if you look at Diego Costa, now, when he stops trying to be the baddie in his own spaghetti western, he's one heck of a player, and he was fantastic on Saturday, wasn't he?
Oh, I'm a huge fan. I quite like him when he's the baddie as well. You know, he's a really disruptive influence. You know, he does what I like better than anything. He gets into the minds of the defenders. Mm. So they're not thinking about what space he should take up. They're not thinking about what they should be doing with the ball, who they should be picking up. They're worried about Costa. Yeah. And I love that. You know, you see the doubt going through their minds. And there's not enough forwards who do that.
Yeah, Costa aged Phil Jagielka by about 3 or 4 years in that particular match.
Well, he's 67 now.
It was unbelievable. I think Costa, in the form that he's in, is the best traditional, old-fashioned number nine around. There's no one better than him as a strong target man centre-forward. Brilliant.
Mm. Can Chelsea win the title?
Yeah, I think Chelsea can win the title. The Liverpool can win the title. Arsenal can win the title. Tottenham, City. I think it's going to come from that group. I can't tell you who is going to win it because there's so many more twists and turns to come. But they've got to be contenders. I think their flaws are, Tony's right, their flaws are at the back. And I think if they get hit by injuries to Hazard and Costa, they'll be in trouble because the backup guys are okay, but they're not at the same level. So, this is the best of Chelsea we're seeing at the moment. It's not long ago they turned up at Arsenal and rolled over easily. It's not long ago that Liverpool made them look bang average. So I think the real Chelsea is somewhere in between.
I think there's going to be a lot of that going on in the Premier League this year where teams are going to be spectacular and then there'll be a run of games where they look woeful. Mm. And it's not just Chelsea that'll apply to. I think that'll apply at some point to Liverpool. You know, I still think the team, the best shape and the best equipped to go on a longer run are Arsenal.
Mm. Mm. What about Liverpool, though? Your team. Mm. Klopp is trying to keep a lid on it, isn't he? Because people are going to run away with this, aren't they?
Well, I mean, I think they're already getting overexcited. You know, titles aren't won in October. You know, it was always a big Liverpool saying.
Or April.
Well, yeah, or April, yeah. It's, but the one thing is, there is cause for excitement with the way Klopp's got that front unit playing. The movements, the intelligence of them, I think they're fantastic. I mean, they've yet to be really truly tested at the back, and that'll be a big issue. I mean, I think there are, in the same way as you'll be able to get behind Chelsea, good teams will be able to get behind Liverpool. But you know what? I don't think there's enough of them to do them that much damage over the season. I still think a top four position would be an absolute massive success for Klopp, and he'd deserve loads of credit for winning the title. Would be a minor miracle.
Mm. They are a jumpers for goalposts team, aren't they? You know, you score two, we'll score three.
Yes.
Mm. How far can that take you?
Well, it can take you an awful long way. We saw it under Brendan Rodgers, didn't we? This is so reminiscent of that season where it was all about how great they were going forward defensively. You know, they shipped a lot of goals. They're not actually shipping a crazy amount of goals at the moment. So they're tearing most teams apart, aren't they? It's brilliant. I think they can ride it out. It's just how long can they stay, you know, on this amazing roll that they're on. I think top four is where they need to be aiming. Mm. But they're capable of winning the title. Look, after Leicester won the league, we can't sit here and say Liverpool aren't good enough to win the league. Mm. Clearly they are. It depends on what the others do. It's all about, can one team string, you know, a really long unbeaten run together?
And that begs the question, do they have the depth of players to do that? Look at Sadio Mane, again, fantastic against Watford. They're going to be missing him in January because of the African Cup of Nations. Some talk about Liverpool going for another striker in the market. Again, you're Jurgen Klopp. Who do you look at?
Oh, well, that's a really good question. Anyone Michael Edwards gives me, I don't.
Your new sporting director.
New sporting director, who I've as much faith as I had before. I don't know. I mean, the one thing about Klopp, he's very astute at these things. He won't be looking for the obvious. He won't be looking for the big money buyer. He'll be looking for someone who suits his system. Mm. He'll be looking for value, in the sense, is he'll want someone who can slot in. I don't think there'll be a big name out there. I think, you know, Mane was a brilliant pickup for him. Everyone's focusing on Coutinho, and he's been absolutely brilliant because he's so direct and he's so clever. But Mane's pace and movement has given him a more license to play. So I think it's fantastic. So I think he'll be looking for someone who fits into his system, and it may not be the marquee signing of, you know, popular fiction.
Mm. What about, if you look at Liverpool's setup at the moment, conversely, they could quite easily lose Coutinho because the way he's playing, Real Madrid, Barcelona, they're going to take notice of that, aren't
they? Well, yeah, he'll be catching the eyes of global giants, no doubt about that. But look, he's in the right place, isn't he, for him at the moment, Liverpool. Huge club in the world. He's their main man. Don't think I'd be in a massive hurry to be leaving Anfield if I was Philip Coutinho. But when Barcelona and Real Madrid come knocking, it's difficult. But look, what can you do? You've just got to enjoy these players while they're here. It was the same with Modric when he was at Spurs. You've just got to, and Bale, you've just got to enjoy them, make the most of their presence while they're there. He is a class act, but he won't be the only player that those clubs are looking for. I'd see no reason why Coutinho can't be a fixture in the Liverpool team, can't become a legend at Anfield like some of the guys from years gone by.
Well, exactly, and he's not going to get in the Barcelona side as good as he's playing at the moment. And Real Madrid, would you go there? Cristiano and Bale, is he going to suit there?
Yeah, I just think sometimes stick. You stick where it works and where you're playing and where you're loved. And, yeah, as I said, I think Coutinho, if he stays at Liverpool for the next 5 years, can cement legendary status there. And there's a lot to be said for that.
Well, and what they'll have to do, they'll have to look at the wage structure and they'll have to pay him the going rate.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be a situation like Raheem Sterling where they let him go for what was frankly below the, you know, the sort of wages you expect to pay him.
Yeah, you've got to act like a big club to keep the big players.
Mm. North London derby, close to your heart, obviously.
Yeah.
What was your view of Arsenal? You know, there's a lot of people saying they still lack that indefinable something which would make them champions.
Yeah, it wasn't their finest hour in the North London Derby. They allowed Spurs really to knock them out of their rhythm. We saw a 15-minute purple patch just before half-time where they ripped Tottenham apart in the way that they sort of destroyed Chelsea earlier on in the season. So we got a glimpse there of what their true capabilities are. But yeah, it was just one of those days where they didn't quite have the sharpness or quality to change the pattern of the game. And the pattern of the game after Spurs equalised was, we are going to knock you around, we're going to make this a stop-start, ugly, untidy type of match. And Arsenal just didn't quite have it on the day to turn it around.
There was also a little bit of a sense that at 1-1, Arsenal were like, a draw hurts you more than it hurts us. You know, this is your sixth draw of the season. You know, we'll win more games. You're falling a bit further behind. I thought there was a little bit of a sort of a settling for us amongst them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, does that speak to a lack of confidence?
I don't think it's a lack of confidence. I mean, I think from the sense I get of Arsenal, there's more confidence there than there has been for a long time. It might be a bit fragile. It would be easy to prick that balloon.
Wenger, I think, has drilled it into the players. If you can't win, don't lose. He's become a pragmatist in many ways, and I think that's a good thing. This Arsenal team, those Spurs rough them up to a certain degree, there is a stronger mentality there this year. There is great depth. It didn't work for them. They won the battle of the benches, hands down, but it didn't matter in this game. They didn't change the game for the better, the substitutes. But the mentality is different this season. For that reason, I feel much more optimistic that Arsenal will stick around at the top. And, you know, you've got the big players are in form. I know it wasn't their best day, but Alexis and Ozil are enjoying outstanding seasons. And for as long as that continues, they will be in with a shout of winning honours.
Well, Wenger's got them playing in the right positions, hasn't he? You know, he's got Sanchez up front. It was a one-man press. You know, he could cause all sorts of problems. Ozil's a bit further forward than he's been. You know, I love what Cazorla and Xhaka and that midfield pairing. And for the first time, they've got two centre-halves who are, you know, in years, that is, two centre-halves who look solid. And, you know, I mean, I love Bella and charging forward.
Yeah, top
so
player.
So I think Arsenal have got the best shape of any side I've seen this year, and if they can retain that level of consistency, I mean, I spoke to Bellerin last week, and you know, when he was saying, we're stronger mentally this year. We're not so much of a pushover, and he admitted, he said, last year, you know, we didn't have the mentality. He said, but this year, we feel we've got it. We're not quite there.
What about Tottenham's mentality, Adrian? Only one goal from open play in the last seven games. Okay, they are unbeaten. I think it's still the best league start for 50 odd years. Again, is there a missing link there?
I think we've been misled into believing that Spurs are an adventurous side. They've got very good attacking players, but the bottom line is Spurs are a powerful defensive team. They are set up to stop other teams from producing their best football. This is in the big games. Yep. And they've also got talents like Eriksen, like Ali, like Kane, who can win the matches for them. But ultimately, Pochettino sets his teams up to be strong and powerful. It's not about pretty football with Spurs. So this is what they are. They will grind out draws. There will be a lot of games they don't win because they're not quite as attack-minded as some of the other title rivals. Do you agree?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, they close people down. They're a swarming team in that sense. They're not going to charge you all over you in movement and passing. And because the short answers up front, they're not going to score enough goals. I mean, you know, Janssen may turn into a player. I think he probably will. But at the moment, he's still very, very raw. And Son, he's not the highest class. What was concerning me a little bit with Pochettino, I mean, we all lauded him to the heavens last year. But I was at Wembley last week against Leverkusen, and he sort of stood on the sidelines, and he had that feeling, it's like, what can I do here? What can I do here? And I've seen them a few times, and there's been that sense of, you know, you're such a tactically minded manager. Well, change things around. Well, he changed things around at the Emirates, going for the back three. And it was, well, successful-ish. But, you know, the reality is, they've got one of the most underwhelming unbeaten runs you've ever seen. You know, more draws than victories. And that won't get them where they need to be. They need to be in the top four. Otherwise, we'll have a repeat of the Bale situation. No Champions League. People look to pick off their big stars.
Yeah. What their biggest star, possibly at the moment, is Moussa Dembélé. Yeah. Pochettino's talking about him as a genius.
Yeah, I think calling Moussa Dembélé a genius is a stretch too far. But he is a good player. I don't think there are any central midfielders in this country that can glide past players as effortlessly as he can. He's so important to them because he is the one player that can just break through the lines and open up space for the attackers to flourish. He's a top player. He had a really good game in the North London Derby. He's had injury problems as well. But they need to hang on to him. But yeah, you know, I don't think he's a genius.
No, he makes a huge difference.
I've got to say, I thought it was a contentious penalty. I thought he threw himself into Koscielny, who was silly for dangling his leg out. But in my book, he threw himself into
the defender. That's a story of modern football, though, isn't it?
Yeah, he's not the only one. Yeah.
Yeah. Talking of stories of modern football, the great story was Leicester winning the league last year. Mm. They can't go and get relegated, can they?
No, they won't get relegated. I think they've been too focused on the Champions League. And it tells you in the first three Champions League games, in the domestic match beforehand, they got beaten 4-1 by Liverpool, 4-1 by Man United, and then 3-0 by Chelsea. And it was like, well, you know what, doesn't matter, we'll go in Europe. Mm. Once they basically qualified, I mean, they were different to Tottenham where they drew.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think now, once we see them qualify for the Champions League, they'll pay a bit more attention to the Premier League, they'll get enough points, they'll be in the top 10, and then come the spring, they'll have another tilt at the Champions League and they'll probably drop off again.
West Brom is the bogey team, aren't they? Every team's got one, and then West Brom have never lost at the King Power. It's 22 years, I think, since they lost away to Leicester. That was almost always going to happen. And you've got to remember, Leicester have had a 20-match unbeaten run prior to that on home turf. So it's not like they've been in awful shape at home. And they've got easier fixtures coming up. They've played pretty much all of the big guns, or most of the big guns, away from home already. So I think we'll see a second half of the season surge from Leicester.
And ironically beaten by Matt Phillips, who's a Scot who can't get in the Scotland squad.
Yeah, how's that work? Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I mean, actually, if you look at Scotland, in that position, they're actually quite well stocked. You've got Ritchie, you've got Snodgrass, you've got Fletcher who can do a bit as well. But yeah, Phillips should be in there, shouldn't he? I don't understand.
So.
He's one of those players that you think maybe has been let down by his own lack of ambition, maybe?
I don't know.
He's muddled along.
What,
really?
Joining West Brom signalled his lack of ambition?
Yeah, that'll get us a few bits of advice.
I mean, it's been the graveyard for a few players joining Tony Pulis's team. But look, he's a player that should really be in that Scotland squad, no doubt about that.
Yeah. The international break, you know, people moan about it almost every time it turns up now. What's your feeling on it? Do you almost, like, resent the loss of momentum of a Premier League season?
Well, in part you do, but you know what? International football's still important. And everyone moans about it when it comes along. If it ever disappears, they'll be pig sick, they'll be sorry about it. And I think, yes, the first international break, coming, you know, the first weekend in September, that feels a bit like, oh, come on, stop it. But, you know, I think it's also nice that we get off the Premier League roller coaster and just step back for a little bit. And
it gives us journalists the chance to get away, go on holiday.
Oh, yeah.
No, I wish. No, but it does. I mean, no, it's nice to have I'm quite happy to have a little break. And I'm with you. I think international football, the major tournament, is almost as good as football gets in terms of watching it as a fan. I feel really passionate about watching the big tournaments.
And the thing is, when the World Cup comes round, when the European Championships come round, everyone's so excited and they love it. But you can't have that without the international breaks.
I just think the qualifying system is flawed. There are too many dead matches. That's the problem, in my view. Like
England-Scotland.
England-Scotland, dead rubber. No, but England v Lithuania, England v Slovakia, England v Slovenia. It's a miracle that Wembley keeps getting such huge crowds, because these aren't games to get the juices flowing. You know, needs must if you want to get to the big stage.
Yeah, Gareth Southgate's been talking this morning about talking to his players about the history of the game and the mentality that you need. Will they really understand it? Or will they need a few thousand people in kilts screaming at them to understand what this game is going to be all about?
Well, I think even if there's a few thousands, they still won't understand it as we'd remember it anyway. He's too young, but we'd remember it. I mean, we remember Wembley being swamped by Scots, you know, for 3 days beforehand, London would be just filled up with, you know, Scottish fans. And there's no sense of that. And it's quite interesting because, you know, in the old days, it'd be the English top flight's best players. This would be a real, you know, showground for them. You know, Keegan versus Dalglish. You know, Keegan was at Hamburg by then. But, you know, earlier on, you know, you'd have Bremner versus Charlton. It'd be a really evocative game. Now, you look to Spain next week and all the Premier League stars are playing in that one. Mm. You know, Costa against Cahill. You know, the Manchester United players up against, you know, Mata might play for Spain. So you're seeing all the big names in different sorts of games. You don't see any big Scottish names these
days.
It's
a question for another day, isn't it? But what has happened to Scottish football? Why aren't they producing those great players? There are so many you just trip off the tongue that you just mentioned. There's no one in that league.
I think, you know, by common consent, too many bang average foreign players and not enough determination to develop their own players at youth level. Mm. If we take this fixture, finally, it should be fun. It'll definitely be feisty. Mm. Who's going to win?
England. Surely. They've got to. It'd be funny if Scotland did.
I don't think it's going to be a classic football match. I don't think we're going to see a lot of tiki-taka.
If there's any football involved, I'd be shocked.
I'd count back against England, but I'd go with a typically dour 1-0 win.
Well, me too. England to win, but let's not get carried away, eh? Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.